You know, me and the show, I'm always looking for new on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett, and I like to sort of push the envelope a little bit. So I always like to find things that don't conveniently fit in any category. That's one of the reasons why I love this photo that's at coasttocoastam.com tonight. Have you seen the photo of this cloud, which a meteorological movement is calling for recognition of? It's a new cloud type, something which hasn't happened since 1951. It's very cool. Go take a look. It's online at coasttocoastam.com. There's a new feature there too. All about Twitter at coasttocoastam.com. You can sign up for that. And a lot of people are Twittering in or Twittering out, or whatever you call it. It's in the tweetosphere. You know, that level, maybe just above that cloud formation on the coasttocoastam.com website, the tweetosphere, where all things tweeting happens. So I've dabbled in the Twitter thing, but I will be. I'll be getting there soon enough. Go take a look online at coasttocoastam.com. While you're there, too, there's an icon for my blog. I put something up there just for fun for tonight, really just for giggles. If you want to click onto a couple of those, I think you'll enjoy it. And very interesting email about last night's show. We were talking about Spy Master, the book that's written by Oleg Kalugin, who was one of the chief KGB agents that spied on the West for something like 32 years, both here under various guises and then back in the USSR, where he continued to be sort of a rising star. He was the youngest general in the KGB, and he had all sorts of successes, many of which made the newspapers here and many of which we never heard about until this book, Spymaster, came out. And I meant to ask him, and I'm kicking myself for not asking him, whether or not he thought there was anything to the story of Roxana Sabiri, the American Iranian journalist who came from North Dakota that was captured by and held by the Iranians for spying because she had continued to report stories, even though her, journalistic visa had run out or something like that. Anyway, she'd been convicted of being a spy, and then eventually they let her out and she came back. So I was meant to ask about that, but we got sidetracked talking about the elections in Iran last night. And our guest, Oleg Kalugin, as a KGB agent, said that he suspected that something's not quite right about this election in Iran. And the more you hear about it, the more it's hard to take seriously these proclamations by the government that this was an election on the up and up. For example, they had to keep the polls open 5 extra or 6 extra hours to allow for everybody to vote, and they were all paper ballots. And yet they had the election results back in 3 hours. We can't do that in Minnesota. And it's an electric ballot. And we were just trying to elect a senator. It's still 6 months later, and we still only have one senator. How did they do that in 3 hours? All right. Well, if they did, then we've got to send over a delegation here from my home state to figure out how to get this election resolved here. We'll put that on the back burner for now and get to open lines coming up this hour. If you don't know the numbers, you can find them by going to coasttocoastam.com, and I'll also give the numbers at the bottom of the hour, but I'd be glad to have you. Open lines for this hour, then coming up next hour, well, these are stories you're never going to forget, from a neurosurgeon who's been watching for evidence of the soul, and he'll tell you all about his special gift, the visions he has, his gifts as a neurosurgeon, as a well-established neurosurgeon, and yet the things that he can't quite reconcile, the things he has seen, coming up next hour that he catalogs in the book The Scalpel and the Soul. But in the meantime, open lines with you and some crypto news next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So if you go to coasttocoastam.com, you'll see the numbers for open lines. Hope you'll join us while you're there. You can also click on to the blog photos I mentioned. I really just put up a blog just for fun. It's already there. I was talking about how many books I try to read during the week to keep up with Coast to Coast and how that's really kind of the biggest burden about this show. I love doing it. It's not the hours. It's that I love the material so much, I always want to finish it. So even when I don't get the book in on time for the interview, let's say I read three quarters of it, like tonight's book, which I won't finish before we get started, about the scalpel and the soul, but I feel like I got a pretty good handle on it. But I will have to go back and finish the rest of this book, which means that I'm going to start this week with two unfinished books before I can even start to go through the small stack of material that's already piling up for next week's show. But it's just so, it's so compelling. It haunts me until I can finish it. So this week, I don't know yet what the guests will be for the upcoming Saturday night show, but I've got, you know, two or three books on my nightstand ready to go through, just trying to pick out the things that I think we'll like. You're going to love tonight. In fact, tonight's guest is comes as a culmination of something which started about a year ago or more, when this book, The Scalpel and the Soul, originally came out in hardcover. And I wanted to do it in the worst way, but George had dibs on it, so I couldn't do it. And then it was just great that it came out in paperback so I could get my shot at it. And you're just going to love this. I don't even know how George did it last time, but you're just going to love this. I may go over the same stuff that he talked about, but you're still going to love it. It's just amazing, jaw-dropping experiences. And they're all related very colorfully and with great detail about the supernatural, things that are seen in operating rooms and in recovery rooms by this neurosurgeon who'll be our guest coming up next hour. You'll be our guest this hour when we do open lines. Oh, and if you click onto the blog at coasttocoastam.com, do it just for fun. I really put up three photos just because they're just sort of like the photos of the week, as far as I was concerned. And they were all things sent in by you all. A couple of quick crypto news items. The Greenland ice sheet is melting faster than expected, and it's a larger contributor to sea level rising than previously thought. That in a story in Science Daily. Quote, the Greenland ice sheet is melting faster than expected, according to a new study led by University of Alaska Fairbanks researcher and published in the journal Hydrological Processes. Study results indicate that the ice sheet may be responsible for nearly 25% of global sea rise in the past 13 years. Study also shows that seas now are rising by more than 3 millimeters a year, more than 50% faster than the average for the 20th century. Now, that's pretty startling and pretty amazing. But then there's this other story, and it's at fizorg.com, and it's a story about how exactly the opposite is happening in Argentina. Argentina. Argentina's glacier is one of only a few ice fields worldwide that have withstood global rising temperatures, and in fact, it's growing. So while the others may be shrinking, at least in Argentina, it is in fact a growing glacier. You can click onto that at fizorg.com. While you're there, too, there's also this story. Testosterone decreases after ingestion of sugar. They're doing these interesting experiments with people who had diabetes and people who didn't. And they know that there's a connection between how much sugar we put in our body and then what happens to our testosterone level. Sort of a hormonal imbalance, if you will. As insulin is released in the body, the hormone insulin is released in the body after massive amounts of sugar, testosterone count goes way down. I mean, significantly down, like 25% down. So keep that in mind. If you have a low testosterone count, it may have to do with all the sugar you've been eating. Either way, it's making me regret the Cocoa Krispies I had for dinner just before I got on the air. So let's get to the phones. For open lines for the rest of this hour, let's start with Jack in Georgia on Coast to Coast AM. Jack, where are you going to take us?
I was actually going to ask you, Ian, I read a piece online last week that they've gotten the go-ahead on a new season of Futurama, and I didn't know if you'd...
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'm very excited about that. In fact, my kids just watched the last Futurama movie, and I only caught half of it, but it's on my list to go back and enjoy. Gosh, I love that show.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I appreciate the heads up on that. In fact, for everybody else out there, if you haven't yet, I mean, it you can pick up all the seasons at like any of the video places or Netflix or whatever, and go back and watch Futurama from the very beginning. I think it's some of Matt Groening's most subtle, but still very most original work. And it's such a bizarre premise, and it's so full of goofy stuff, and I'm so glad they're bringing it back as a show. But, you know, since we're talking about TV, very disappointed in what I heard today, that TBS is passing on My Name is Earl. Now, TBS has been running the reruns, right? I mean, they've had the rights for that, but they had the chance because NBC was passing on further episodes of My Name is Earl to pick up the first run rights, and they were going to keep creating new ones. I don't know why they're not. There's some other really dopey comedies that they're creating. I don't know why they wouldn't take this one. I think it's a very funny show. And what also is a very original premise for a comedy. John is in Tampa, Florida on Coast to Coast AM. John?
Yeah, last night I almost got on, but I didn't get on. Thanks for having me on tonight.
Happy to do it.
I think we've still got, I was going to ask Oleg last night if he thinks we still have spies coming in on student visas to America like they used to have in his book.
Right.
And the reason why I was going to ask him this is because I think I've come across somebody who's the same M.O. as Oleg was, and in fact his name is Oleg.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. Well, it's a very common name, but you're right. I mean, I should have asked that question probably. How many spies do we still have in this country that come in on student visas from Russia? I was surprised when he said that at its height, that they probably only had 300 spies in the United States. I mean, including assets and other people, that only 300. And he said it wasn't about the quantity, it's about the quality.
Well, it sort of made sense to me that I've got my own spy. I invented a pyramid bed back in the 70s and 80s. And as I understood, the government was using this pyramid bed for the remote viewing exercises. And I wanted to ask Oleg whether or not he had heard anything about that, because I was never able to market the pyramid bed. I had some problems that occurred behind the scenes, and I actually was bankrupted.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. What was the unique feature about the pyramid bed?
There was a quartz crystal on the top, and there was a TENS machine that was running power to the quartz crystal. And you could control the volume and frequency of the electricity going to the quartz crystal at the top. And it would lay the TENS machine on your chest, and you would control it. And that would allow you to control your... the power of the pyramid as you laid there in bed.
What did you get from that?
Well, I was able to see into the future, but I imagine the remote viewers were able to see into Russia. And then the Russia people found out what they were using and sent me a spy to spy on me.
And it was a guy,
inventor of the bed.
And that was somebody named Oleg?
Yeah, there was somebody named Oleg, and he was a journalism student, and he didn't have any real means of support, and I wondered what the heck's going on with this guy, and then I heard your show last night, and things started to make sense. And
So you think the Russians sent this guy to spy on you to stop the bed from being marketed?
No, not to stop the bed from being marketed, but to find out what else I would come up with. Because they already stopped the bed from being marketed in the U.S., and I couldn't figure out why that would happen. And I believe it had to do with the fact that we sold 12 beds to the United States government at one time, and a lot of 12 at one time, and that was for the remote viewing project. And so they thought it worked so well that somehow or another we weren't able to sell any more beds.
Interesting. Well, I'm sorry that happened to you and that you were bankrupted by that, and that nobody else will have the opportunity to have their own crystal-topped pyramid bed. But if you ever get back into production on it, make sure you let us know. And Bob, first-time caller line, is in Florida on Coast to Coast. Bob?
Hey, how you doing, Ian?
Doing great. Where do you want to take us?
Oh, yeah. I thought that the Oleg Kalugin presentation was really outstanding last night. You know, I grew up during the Cold War and civil defense. Go under your table. The Russians are coming, you know. Here comes
right.
the bomb, you know.
Duck and cover.
I know. Hey, I do want to make a few comments on his comments, though, and just see where it takes us here. I was really impressed with his synopsis of Martin Luther King, and in a sense, when he said that Martin Luther King really started a movement at the people's level. We would use the term grassroots, I think, you know, in our lingo, but versus the KGB that would perhaps manufacture a certain social or political platform.
Right.
And then he said something that was confusing. The people would adhere to that particular platform, and then they'd be sent to jail or something. Did you?
Yeah, no, that was exactly what happened. Yeah, sure. I'm happy to flesh that out for a little bit. What he said was that in the KGB would create a dissident. They would hire somebody essentially as an actor, and they would, you know, they would take somebody from their ranks, and they would go in the sort of out into the public in the position of a dissident, attract other dissidents. They would arrest those other dissidents, and they would send them all to jail.
Oh, them. Okay, I see. Now, I want to bring up something that maybe you have seen in the book or maybe was discussed and I missed it. Way back during the Russian Missile Crisis, there was a really interesting triangle between President Kennedy, Fidel Castro, and Nikita Khrushchev. And evidently there was some discussion about to the effect that Khrushchev said to Kennedy, don't trust Castro. He really does want a nuclear war in order to suit his own ends and his own political objectives. And I was just curious if it ever came up in the book or in your conversations, whether or not Oleg had any contact with Fidel Castro, or if he knew about, let's say, the conflicts that may have occurred between Fidel Castro, Kennedy, and Khrushchev.
Well, yes and yes to the last part. The and thank you for the really great questions. I think you're going to love the book, Spy Master. In fact, if you missed the interview, you can go back because it's still a free Streamlink weekend, right? You can go back and listen to it at coasttocoastam.com to this show last night to our guest talking about spying on the West. He did talk about Fidel Castro. He did talk about the relationships, the various relationships of these world leaders. However, he didn't go into any detail on that particular comment or, you know, a warning about Fidel. He did talk a lot about Khrushchev. It's interesting, too, to see how the KGB changed over the course of time. We think that they are just kind of this monolithic, you know, group that has always been what they've been, and they haven't. They struggled. And there was a time when they became very disoriented about what they were about, kind of paralleled a little bit about what the CIA was going through for a while as well. But I highly recommend it, just like I recommend the book tonight, The Scalpel and the Soul. There's an interesting story at coasttocoastam.com. If you click onto it, it's in the news section, and it's about a haunted church in the UK, a church which has been converted into a community center, sadly, as so many of churches in England have been. And I say sadly, meaning not that they haven't found a good use for the building, but that there aren't enough people to support a congregation anymore in these small towns. But it's a beautiful building, and they're seeing ghosts, and you can link onto that at coasttocoastam.com. We'll talk about that coming up next hour, too. John is in San Diego. Hey, John.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. This would be your big moment, buddy. Go ahead.
Oh, my God. This is first time. Long time listener, first time caller. Hey, just real quick, I got a couple of things to touch on. One, there was a UFO incident I read about years ago when I was in high school. It took place right near a couple of years after World War II when the U.S. Air Force was still using, you know, like old P-51 Mustangs.
Right.
Okay, have a good night. Okay. Apparently, what happened was a base radar picked up a UFO, incoming UFO. They sent this guy in a P-51 up into the sky, up to go check it out. And guy goes up into the clouds. The next thing anybody here knows is that the pieces of the plane.
Because that even that place.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm gonna say you need to go finish up whatever you're doing right there. I gotta wrap this up. So I understand we caught you at a bad time, John, and I'm sorry about that. I'm coming up to the bottom of the hour, and I got a lot of other people who are hanging on. It sounds like you're otherwise engaged. And by the way, John, fries with mine, and if you could, extra pickles. Thank you. So let's go ahead and get the rest of your calls. If you don't know the numbers yet, we'll run them coming up for you in just a minute. Go online and take a look at all these great stories and find out more about Streamlink at coasttocoastam.com. This is Ian Punnett. You know, we were just talking about the Iranian elections a little earlier this hour, and I was checking on a couple of different sources just to see what's going on there. Since I hadn't really seen anything since earlier in the night, and because they're a little ahead in time, it's growing. The protests are growing. And, you know, the newly reelected president, Mohammed, I always want to call him Al-Mandin Jihad, because that's the only way I can remember it. Anyway, he's really clamping down. So the BBC, for example, is saying that reporters on the ground there are describing the situation this morning, Monday morning, as explosive. We'll keep an eye on that. I'm not sure where that's going to end up going. Could it mean the downfall of Ahmadinejad's regime, or could this be that it'll be kind of a new kind of totalitarianism, and this experiment with democracy is over? But it's still adding up all weird, obviously, that they would keep the polls open for 6 hours to give everybody a chance to vote. But within 3 hours, every paper ballot in the entire country of Iran had been counted. And the president, surprise, won by a 2-1 margin. It's just so unlikely. It's almost funny. But we'll watch for that. Obviously, I'm pulling for the opposition, not just because I agree with a more moderate position toward the West, but I know how to pronounce Mousavi. It's a lot easier. And I like that a lot better than tripping over the other guy's name for the next 4 years. We'll get to your name coming up in just a minute. Try and line everybody else up next for open lines. Hey, make sure that you're done with whatever phone call you're having or whatever else is going on in the background so we can keep you on the air, too. Coming up next on Coast to Coast AM, this is Ian Punnett. So the book is The Scalpel and the Soul. You're just going to love this. Coming up in a few minutes, a neurosurgeon and his life observing the body and its relationship to the spirit. He's a scientist, but he's got to tell you, there's plenty of weird stuff he's seen that he accounts in this book that you'll never forget it. Simple stuff. I mean, he did not come at this from the standpoint of being a religious man looking for proof of his ideas. It was the other way around. This stuff just started freaking him out. It's really cool. Coming up in just a few minutes on Coast to Coast. In the meantime, open lines and a fun blog up at coasttocoastam.com. Some pictures up there that you'll link onto just for a smile. Gary is in North Plains, Oregon on Coast to Coast. Gary?
Good evening, Ian.
Good evening.
Hey, I was just wondering something. I'm half Mexican and half white.
Okay.
And I've been laid off lately, so I've been filling out a lot of job applications. And I mark on there where it says race, I mark Caucasian, and I mark Mexican. So I'm just curious on how President Obama can call himself a black man or a white man when he's actually both.
Well, I think he actually would be the first one to tell you that that's a conflict he's been dealing with his whole life. I mean, I don't think he doesn't get deeply into the whole African-American thing. It's really more how society considers you to be black. If you're half black, society considers you to be black.
Okay, I really didn't realize that. Thank you very much.
Well, I mean, and I don't know that that helps with your particular situation, because I don't know that society feels the same way. In fact, when you say Mexican, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I have many Hispanic relatives by marriage. My sister-in-law is originally from Cuba. My brother-in-law is, his mother was from Mexico, but his father was Mexican from Spanish origin. And so I don't know that just by putting Mexican, you really mean not white. There's lots of Caucasians that grow up, spend their whole life in Mexico, correct?
That's correct.
So you can be totally Caucasian and 100% Mexican.
you have a very good point there. Thank
so, you. Yeah, no problem. I think what you really, and it's interesting that he's making the point or feeling self-conscious about it, is the Indian side, right? The native Mexican side of Mexico. And there are just lots of different flavors to Mexico, just like there is to the United States. Interesting point. And I know that Colin Powell still doesn't talk about himself as being African-American. He just says other people do, so he doesn't fight with them. It's a complication I'm glad I don't have to deal with, but I don't think we'll be sorting that out anytime soon. Anyway, Mark is in Scottsdale, Arizona on Coast to Coast. Hey, Mark.
Hey, my first time. I got through. I love it, man.
Glad to have you.
Yeah, listen, about Obama, you know, really, it's not the color. He's just one of those Bilderberg yo-hos, you know, and kind of really ticks me off. But you remember that one cop that tased that grandmother, great-grandmother, because she didn't want to get a ticket or something?
We're talking about a video that's been going around the web of a 72-year-old grandma that didn't cooperate with a police officer, and he kept telling her, you can't go here, you can't go there, and she was really baiting him to taser her. I thought that was weird. Why did you see the video?
Yeah, because if I saw it, I would have stopped, and I would have kicked that cop's ass. You don't hit a grandmother with a taser, you goofball. You know, we're in America. You know, it's like.
Wait. Why does she, Mark? I'll play devil's advocate on that with you. Why does she get to do whatever she wants? If that had been you or me.
Yeah.
And we were telling the cop what we'll do and what we won't do, that cop would have tasered us in a heartbeat. And the fact that this woman got all mouthy from the get-go, uh-huh. and she was getting in his grill, and she was getting in his space, and he gave her 15 warnings. Ma'am, I will taser you. Ma'am, stop that. Go over here, or I will taser you. He gave her all these warnings, right? Why didn't she just do it?
But look at her age. She's an elder, this guy.
And so what? Wait. So at what age do we get to just tell a police officer what we're going to be willing to do?
You can't. They're evil to me. At 11 or 12 o'clock, you're talking to some, he's like a neurologist or something?
Talking, yes, to a brain surgeon. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got shot back in 1984, January 29th, and I was a mercenary. One of my friends, he shot me in the head. In the left temple, and I had met a neurologist, but it was really hard, and I came out of it. I got my sanity back. I got my degree back. It's just hard to do. There's a lot of stuff that came true that I had, like visions, like May the 10th, 2015. That's going to be a bad day, trust me, people, if we're
what,
still.
What day?
May the 10th. I had a vision.
Of what year? I'm sorry?
2015.
2015, May the 10th.
Yeah, and the Lord's going to come down, and I died. It's like, wow, it's what I think that's the dude. I don't know. Nobody knows, but it's like that happened also April the 19th, 1990, down in Miami. My father worked down there. He built them athletically in different colleges. We lived in New Hampshire. We, you know, lived out of state a lot. But anyway, with the cop, you know. Just,
okay, I'm having a hard time following you. I think we got enough topics in there. Mark, I hope you feel like you've had some good time on the air. And let's get to Sarah in New York in the time that we have left on Coast to Coast. Hey, Sarah.
Hi.
Hey.
Well, two other compelling reasons aside from the sugar, not to eat the Cocoa Puffs, Pops, whatever. Sugar.
You're going to diss my Cocoa Krispies? You're
going to. Cocoa Krispies. Okay. This is two things that people generally don't know. Anything that is starch that has been seriously baked, and the more the worse it gets. The more crunchy it gets, certainly the less nutrients are in it. But years ago, the Swedes decided to check different common foods for a chemical called acrylamide that occurs when you bake things, especially to a crisp, like toast or crispy cereals, things like that. And our government had established how much acrylamide could be in drinking water. And it was a relatively low amount because it's very carcinogenic. Well, nobody happened to check these types of foods. They're completely off the charts. I mean, they're according to U.S. standards, of course, Sweden told the United States and FDA decided apparently not to do anything about it. you know, because everybody lives on this stuff. The other thing is, and I have not checked this out for myself, but there's a man who did a videotape demonstration on YouTube that I saw recently where he took an unnamed brand of, you know, typical crap breakfast cereal, crunchy stuff in a box in a bag. He put half of the bag of a medium-sized box of cereal into a blender, added some water, blended it up, and put it in a Ziploc bag, sort of probably like a gallon size. And he took two magnets. He said they were fairly strong magnets, and he was going to prove that the iron content that they're putting in some, I don't know how many, enrich, you know, when they talk about enriching things, it means they're adding some sort of nutrients like vitamins and minerals. He showed, and there's, again, you can find this on YouTube, that the iron that they're putting in these, at least some cereals and maybe even some pastas, anything that says enrich, are iron filings, completely unbioavailable and probably really contributing towards iron storage problems that a lot of us have.
Well, Sarah, I'll tell you, I don't believe everything I see on YouTube, but I will try that experiment. What, Sarah? No. I'm going to say, but I will try that experiment, and I will, because that sounds easy enough to do, and I'll take Cocoa Krispies, I'll put them in a blender, I'll get a magnet, and then I'll see if I can't get iron shavings to come up to the top of the bag. That's the experiment.
Follow the directions on the and see. Let us know.
Well, I'll follow your directions. I'll give it a try. And in the meantime, I'm not going to have you ruin my weekly bowl of Cocoa Krispies. And I'm pretty sure the human body can stand one bowl of Cocoa Krispies a week. But I understand some people don't even want to do that. That's totally fine. East of the Rockies, Chad is in Louisville, Kentucky, on Coast to Coast. Hey, Chad.
Good evening. A little something lighter. I just had three real quick questions, and I'll let you go. Number one, who's your favorite Watchman?
Good question. Well, I mean, yeah. Who's yours?
Rorschach.
Okay. Well, see, like that's like the Wolverine of the Watchmen. Everybody loves Rorschach.
Batman had a kid. You know?
Yeah, I totally love Rorschach. But I would say sometimes I was just reading it the other day. I kind of get into the whole Dr. Manhattan thing. I think that's very cool. But
yeah, there's definitely kind of a what would God think if he was down here element to it.
Right.
Number two, what's your favorite Dean Koontz book, and have you read The Taking?
I haven't read The Taking yet.
You've got to read it.
I'm not
give away the ending.
Yeah.
Don't let anybody tell you the ending. Just trust me, read The Taking.
He's got a new one out now, too. My wife was just telling me about it, and I haven't seen the title yet, but I've read the last four. Is that the new one? I don't think so.
No, I think he's got a new hardback out.
Yeah,
I think
he does.
Odd Hours just came out in paperback.
Yeah, it's a new one that just came out just in the last week or so because she asked me if we were going to have him back on the air soon. And last question?
The last question, and I know you've probably answered it 100 times. What does Deus Tiamat mean? I know Deus is God. I always figured it meant God loves you, and so do I.
There you go. You're smart. You know more. You know more than you think you know. There you go. That's what they used to say in seminary. You know more than you think you know. Thank you, Chad. Appreciate that. Bill is in Omaha, Nebraska, on Coast to Coast, coming up to the top of the hour when we'll get to the scalpel and the soul. Hey, Bill.
Hey, what's up, Ian?
Open lines. Go ahead.
First time caller.
Glad to have you. Have at it.
I had a quick question for you. With the June 8th, 25th anniversary and the upcoming game coming out, I was wondering if you guys were planning on having Dan Aykroyd back on again anytime soon.
You know, Aykroyd, I think, is a George thing. I think when he comes on, he's come on with George. He's a friend of a friend, though, and so I've been actually wondering whether or not to ask my friend for a favor in getting Dan Aykroyd on for myself, but I may not be able to. I think he's overdue to come back on. What about you?
Yeah, he definitely is. Love Ghostbusters, man, with all that stuff coming out.
With G3 coming out?
You know, well, it's a video game, but it's
no, the Ghostbusters 3 movie is. I mean, that's really that's in the works.
Yeah, it sounds pretty cool. The video game comes out in like a day, so.
Yeah, and everybody's talking about that. In fact, I saw a review that said it's an excellent game. I saw that on FARC.com. They said that the early reviews for Ghostbusters 3, the video game, are terrific. I'm also working on getting Harry Shearer of Spinal Tap on for a quick appearance. There's a new video of, I can't remember, or a new album, Spinal Tap album coming out this week. I'll have to look into it, but we'll get him on coming up soon too. Rick is in Kentucky on Coast to Coast. Rick?
Yes. How you doing?
Good. Where in Kentucky are you, Rick?
I'm in Berea, Kentucky.
I know Berea. I've been in Berea.
Really?
Not only have I been in Berea, which is an amazing little, just to prove how much I know about Berea, it's an amazing little arts town. It's filled with these cool shops, people doing very original artwork, a lot of pottery, right?
Yeah,
there's right. The Berea College, where I spent two nights. I slept in a dorm in Berea College about 3 years ago.
Is that right?
Well, yep.
My daughter graduated from Berea.
What an excellent school.
It actually is. You know, they end up not paying for...
I know. Is it nice to have a college graduate, Rick, and you don't have bills you're still working off?
You got that right.
That's a very good school.
I tell you what I was calling for. I don't know if you can help me or not, but literally for about 30 years, I've been trying to figure out where a program I watched as a child came from, what series it came from. It was either from like One Step Beyond or Twilight Zone,
right?
A series like that.
Okay.
It was a 30-minute show. It was about, it starred William Bendix, if you know who he is.
I do, the old movie star.
Right. And what it was he had gone to a psychiatrist on a Saturday to try and correct a sleeping problem. He couldn't, he was having nightmares and couldn't get a full night's sleep because he'd always wake up. And it was always the same nightmare. And it was about being at Pearl Harbor when the attack happened, and a Japanese plane was firing into his hotel room. And right when that happens, he wakes up, and he's scared that if he stays asleep, that he'll die, you know.
Right.
And what ends up happening is the psychiatrist is writing all this down, and he looks up, and Bendix just disappeared. And the psychiatrist is dumbfounded, basically, and goes on home, and he stops at a bar to have a drink. And he looks behind the bar, and there's all the bartenders that have ever tended bar there, and there's a picture of this guy. And he asks the bartender there what happened, and the guy said, well, he had been killed at Pearl Harbor, just the way that the dream was. And I've always tried to figure out where that particular show came from, and I was even going to write George Norrie because I know he's a fan of those kind of shows. And
I am too, and I'm also real quickly going through something here, and I'll see if I get lucky with that. I was looking for him on IMDb, right, on the Internet Movie Database. There's the General Electric Theater. That he did an episode of in 1961. And then I'm trying to look of whether there's anything else that would fall.
That would have been about the right year. I know that.
And then after that, there really isn't anything that's listed in terms of like, Westinghouse. What was that, Jason? Westinghouse Desilu Playhouse. Maybe that's a possibility. Here, go on to imdb.com and type in William Bendix and see where that takes you. See if any of those titles sound like they could be it. All right? And good luck to you on that. It was a pleasure to talk with you. Give my love to Eastern Kentucky and Appalachia in general. We'll get back to The Scalpel and the Soul next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.